Cooper comes up, hits it.
Yeah!
Oh my God! What a goal! What a goal by Mick Fleming!
Boglic.
There's the goal!
Richie!
Hello and welcome to the official Scotland podcast here in the Museum at the National Stadium, Hampden. This is our first in our series of special podcasts with legends and cult heroes of the Scotland national team. And who better to start with than James McFadden? 10 years since that goal in France. James, sorry to make you feel old. 12th of September, first and foremost. Can you believe it's been 10 years?
No, I can't. Obviously, that's a long time and a lot's happened since. But it's nice, you know, it's nice to look back, and I'm sure we'll cover a lot about it.
we absolutely will. Take us back to that time then, because a lot's happened since then. In many ways, that's one of it's the goal that people remember you for. Take us back to that day, that game, everything that was riding on it. What are your memories of the occasion?
I think it was obviously a huge game, and we knew that going into it. There wasn't many people who gave us a chance, but you know, we had nothing to lose going into it. We were expected to lose home and away to France and Italy, of course. And then, I mean, I think if we'd have finished third ahead of Ukraine, and people said that at the start of the group, that'd have been ideal. But for us, you know, we really fancied it. We had a good team, no any superstars, just a good team with a great spirit. It was more like a club team. Everybody got on, and we were all pulling in the right direction. And getting into that game, it was, you know, we really fancied it. We felt we could go there and win, especially beating them at home as well, but we knew that they would be up for it, if you like, a wee bit more than probably the first game, because we'd beat them, it was robbery the first game, and we went there thinking, you know, we'll prepare properly and we'll go and give them a game, and we done that.
Where do you manage to get that confidence from? Because you talk about the Scotland team not having any superstars. Well, the France team certainly had one or two, five or six, perhaps a full team of superstars. What is it that gives you the belief that not only you can beat them once in a campaign, but twice?
I think because we've done it before, and as I said, we had a fantastic spirit. It was like a club team. We had a lot of players for Celtic, a lot of players for Rangers. That was forgot about when we met up in camp. We had a few guys playing in the Premier League in England, and we had a great belief, led of course by Alec McLeish, who was a great motivator, a great man manager, and you know, the whole thing was just right, you know, it worked, and the belief we had was, you know, we'll go and win the game, we'll give as best we can, and hopefully that's good enough.
In terms of the goal then, 64 minutes gone, the ball's in the night sky, it's dropping towards you, you take it from there, talk us through it.
It was just, I mean, the whole game, anybody that's played up front as a lone striker will tell you all you have to do is work. If you're on about, then it makes the team's job a wee bit easier, and that's what I've done. The first hour, it was, you know, just run about, half chance here, maybe a half decent cross there, better decision could have made a difference. And I just thought, I'm tired. I'm tired of running. I want to get a shot. You know, you do a lot of running and it's chasing it. You want a throw in or a free, a corner or whatever. You've done your job. But I was tired. I've said this many times. The night before we were training on the pitch and the balls were flying everywhere, and I thought, if I get a chance to shoot, I'm going to shoot. And that was I felt as though that was my chance. Although it was probably, I shouldn't have been shooting for there. I had no right to shoot for there. But I knew that Barry Ferguson was the furthest forward player, apart from myself. And when I turned around, there was maybe six French jerseys in front, and there was no way we were going to get through them. So I thought, just have a shot, and thankfully it's went in.
I mean, when you see it back, it seems like such a quick decision. What can you remember of the thought process? Because it seems to me that you know, you pull the ball down and you turn and hit it straight away, as if you already sort of knew that's what was going to happen. Is it? Can you remember it going through your head at that time, or is it an instinct thing?
No, I remember. As the ball's in the air, I've took a touch and I leaned back to feel, but there was nobody there. So as it bounced up, I've took it on a half turn, and I thought, right, I'm going to just turn and hit it quick and hopefully take them by surprise. Usually, or for the majority of the game, whenever it was coming in, there was somebody close to me and I wasn't really getting any room to turn. And the fact that, as I said, I felt for the defender and they'd backed off. And as I said, I took it in a half turn. I thought, I'm just going to shoot as soon as I don't get the goalie a chance to set. Don't let the defenders close you down, because if you take another touch, then the goalie kind of covers the angles and it needs to be a better strike. So I just thought, you know, as I said, it played my mind that the night before, if I get a chance to shoot, I will shoot. And that was my chance.
I mean, Scotland fans everywhere remember how they felt when that ball hit the back of the net. Do you remember how you felt? Is it one of those, because sometimes these moments of, you know, the joy so much that it's perhaps a bit surreal. Do you remember the ball hitting the back of the net?
I remember shooting and thinking, right, I've hit it nice. I can feel that it's a good shot. And then I thought, it's gone in, but the goalie's kind of covered it and he got a touch and I wasn't sure if it hit the bar and bounced out and just this stunned silence. I'll never forget the silence. They thinking, what, have I scored? Was it in? And then obviously the euphoria, I've turned round, the Tartan Army are away in the other corner, or the majority, the rest of them were obviously dotted here, there and everywhere in the stand, and I thought I'm going to run all the way out to them, and I thought, no, that's a wee bit far. I get by Piro. Piro always says to me about it. I get by him and then it was just the rest of the team. And that was just, I can remember the feeling, it was amazing. Obviously after the game you think, oh, it's all right, I'll get more nights like that. I didn't realise just how special a night it would have been.
Is that something then that when you're at this stage, you look back on, you know, you look back on it with the kind of fondness of having realised that you don't get too many more nights like that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a night that I used to obviously enjoy, but at other times I used to think, you know, everybody only wants to talk about that one goal I scored for Scotland, but I scored 15 goals for my country and it was like they were forgot about, and I used to get a wee bit upset about that, but I can look back now and say a fantastic night to be a part of, and obviously I'm so grateful that people still talk about my goal and want to make as big a fuss about one goal in 10 years.
Well, that's the thing, because do you feel like it is a goal that defines you? I mean, we're sitting here in the Hampden Museum. The boots that you wore that night are right there. There's a massive picture of it up as you enter one of the main entrances here at Hampden. We're here talking about it. Everyone wants to talk about it. Like you say, it's almost it's a nice thing to have. Do you feel like it will be the goal that defines James McFadden, the footballer?
I think it has done. I mean, I think, going back to what I said a wee minute ago, I didn't want it to define me because at that time I was young and I had so much in front of me and I thought, right, let's not get carried away. Don't milk it here, but you're going to get a better night. I wanted to be the guy that, later on in that campaign especially, that went and scored the goal that made us qualify for a tournament. I wanted to be playing at a tournament, maybe score a goal at a tournament. And I just thought, right, enjoy it as much as you can, but don't get carried away, because at the end of the day, and we all found out, it meant not a lot in the end. So I didn't really want that to be, oh, look at him celebrating a goal that in the end didn't really mean anything. But the fact you've got time and I'm close to the end of my career now, you see just, you know, how big a deal it was, and you can understand why people get carried away.
If you take the goal aside, then look back to that campaign as a whole. We all know how close it was. It was a campaign that you hit many of your heights for Scotland as well. What are your main memories of it? What feelings do you take away from that campaign?
Unbelievable highs with unbelievable lows at the end. I think it just, you know, it started well, and we just kept going. We kept winning game after game, putting in good performances while we're winning the games. And the more it got to it, we thought, right, we've just beat France away, especially when you got to that point, you think, we can win this group, we can qualify as winners. The bigger picture is, we've won the group and we've qualified for a tournament. The even bigger picture is, we've beat the last two finalists of the World Cup on our road to get there. When we were going to, as we saw it, we were going to knock one of them out. It could have been the World Champions, but we're knocking out of the group stages. So I think the confidence, I keep going back to it, the team spirit we had at that time was phenomenal. And I just think it's overall, probably ever since France 98, it was the best chance we had of qualifying, and it's absolutely gutting that we never made it.
I don't feel so bad about talking through some of the lows, because we've had a good chance to go over the highs first and foremost. The Georgia game is one that sticks out for everyone. The claret strip, the two teenagers they had playing, we had already done a lot of the hard work in the group. How much does that result still rankle with you?
It's horrible. Every time I can't think about scoring a goal against France without thinking about the disappointment of the Georgia game. You know, it's great. We beat France home and away. We went toe-to-toe with Italy. We beat Ukraine, soundly beat them at home. And yet we couldn't go and beat the team that, if we'd have beat, it would have been enough for us to qualify. As you say, the circumstances of the game, with the young players playing, who, by the way, were decent, but, you know, they had a 16 or 17-year-old goalie, and we hardly gave them a problem. And it's disappointing. And it's one that still you think, if only we'd have turned up for the first maybe half an hour of that game, could have been enough to see it off with something to defend. Having said that, we should have got a Stonewall penalty in the first half, and I'll never forget, you know, the referee's his attitude towards it. You know, it was a Stonewaller for me, and it was a decision that...
No, it was on you, of course,
wasn't it? It was on me, and it was a decision that you think, you know, it's so dismissive for the referee that it could have changed the course of our football history.
That's the thing, because when we as fans or working in the media watch games and you look at players reacting to referees' decisions and how often they're unhappy with decisions and so on, how much do you remember those big decisions that have gone against you in your career? Because that must be right up there. If there's one bad decision that's gone against you in your career, in fact, well, we'll get on to another one in a second, I'm sure you know what that is, but, you know, is it still the type of thing you really do look back on and with a kind of disbelief?
I think because it wasn't like a coming together, or, you know, the ball was there. The ball wasn't even there. It was flicked over his leg, and I went to run. As I went to run, he stuck his leg out and blocked me. That's a foul. So there's ones where you can sympathise to an extent or understand why the referee's made that decision, and there's others that you can't fathom it, why it would be in the favour of the defender at that stage. So you remember, listen, we'll go and speak about it as well, you remember chances you've missed, you remember decisions going against you, and there's stuff that happens that, like, I was the world's worst for having bother with referees. Everybody knows it. It's just always been, I don't like injustice, but I think it's injustice. So it was difficult, but it's just because you want to win and you want to do well, and you feel as if you've been wronged and you want to right the wrong.
It allows us to move seamlessly on to another huge injustice of the campaign, or what seemed like an injustice anyway. The Italy game, while we're on the theme of heartbreaking decisions, just talk us through what it was like to be a player and you see Alan Hutton over in the corner, quite clearly barged to the ground, and then the referee gives a free kick the other way.
Aye, I mean, again, having played against the bigger teams, generally they got the decision. They did. And to feel that, I mean, I don't think anybody watching it can understand why he gave a free kick to Italy. And in the end, obviously, a draw might not have been enough, probably wasn't enough for us, but it was still the sense of injustice. There's a few things in that game, the quick free kick, the ball boy throwing the ball back early when we were no set, obviously. The quick throw in, sorry, for the first goal. And then I have a great chance at one each, and it's one that it can still keep me. I won't sleep well tonight, actually, having to think about it again.
Did you have it?
Well, I get it anyway. I'll have a flashback and think, you know, just I should have ran a wee bit earlier, and that would have been the goal that then everybody would have spoke about. The France goal would have been insignificant in comparison to that.
That's interesting, because as somebody who's obviously never played the game, I often wonder if players are able to get over those things, so to speak, or push them to the back of their mind and think, you know, well, it is what it is, focus on the positives. We talk about the goal in Paris and so on, but genuinely then that is a thing that every now and then you'll look at the chance against Italy and think,
aye,
what could
absolutely.
It be?
I mean, as I said, the goal against France is the one that we're all want to talk about, but I'm more than 100% sure that if that was if that had been in, then that would have been the goal that we spoke about, and it would have been a pat in the back. That was a nice goal you scored against France, but, you know, you scored a yard and a half tap in to get us to the Euros, and that would have been the goal that meant the most.
Who do you look back on your Scotland career as a whole then? Because you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that A lot of your top moments must have come in a Scotland jersey. There was a period there where you were the main man, and it seemed regardless of what was happening at club football, you always managed to raise your game with a Scotland jersey on. Is that something you sort of felt at the time, were aware of?
Aye, I did. I mean, I've throughout my career, I've had a great self-belief, and, you know, I always backed myself. More importantly, I played football, and I played it to enjoy it. And I felt that, you know, I wasn't playing at Everton. Majority of my career was at Everton, and it was a relief for me. I could come away and go and train and have fun and impress the manager, and come on, the fans took to me instantly. And the feeling I got, even if I wasn't starting, coming off the bench, the crowd, the noise off the crowd was unbelievable. And I felt as though that it was my chance to go, and you know, I was truly backed by the fans. Everybody wanted me to do well, and because I managed to score a few goals, it was, you know, that perception of, if I'm playing them, I've got a chance, and I relished it. I loved it. I loved there's nothing better than playing for your country, and the fact that the country's willing you to do well, and hoping that you're the man to score the goals or to bring a performance out in somebody. I loved that.
Because you go back to your debut, we debate all the time, don't we, nowadays, about at what age people are ready to play for the national side. I mean, you're only 19, you're breaking through in a Motherwell team, which is in a difficult period at Fir Park, let's be honest, but you've managed to come catch the eye with some performances at 19, off to the Far East to make your Scotland debut. That must have been quite a surreal moment.
It was, but you know, at that time, there was a lot of people getting caps, and as I said, I had great belief, and I used to think, well, you know, at that time, I'd come into the Motherwell team and scored 10 goals in the last half of the season, which was a great return for, you know, considering I never really played as a striker until that point. So I felt as though there was other players that were getting a chance, and I felt, you know, I think I should be getting a chance here as well. As I said, I had a great self-belief, I wasn't arrogant, but I believed my ability. Looking back, you know, all things considered, a lot of players probably got caps that maybe they shouldn't have, or they were maybe too young at the time, but we were in a transitional period, and it was up to somebody to come in and nail their place, and that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to come in and play, and I didn't care who was playing in front of me.
Now, bearing in mind this is an official Scottish FA podcast, how much are you willing to tell us about the missed flight home?
No, we're not talking about that today. That's for another time. For a write a book, maybe.
Something that you sort of, I guess, what happened thereafter allows you to recover that.
Of course it does. I mean, as I said, the fans were great with me. I obviously, no going to lie and say that drink wasn't involved. I was drink involved. I was young. I'd enjoyed my first cap. And what happened after was, you know, Tommy Burns phoned me and told me, you know, phone the manager. And I was like, young boy, terrified. Betty Vokes, at the time, I didn't feel was too approachable, especially considering, you know, I thought that was the end of my Scotland career. So I phoned him, and he was absolutely brilliant with me. Said, you know, everybody misses planes, buses, they'll miss trains, don't worry about it. Go and work hard, and we'll see where you are. And the fans took to me. It was almost like they were happier that I missed my flight than that I played for Scotland at the time. So they always looked at me and thought, whether it was sympathy or whether they just thought,
it's like a badge of honour for a Scotsman.
He's just normal, isn't he? And we just want him to do well, he's one of us, and you know, I'll never look back from there.
What was life like under Bertie Vokes then? Because certain players have got things that seem to follow them about forever, and that cheeky boy tag is never going to leave you, is it? I think it must be something that you get reminded of still to this day.
I do. I mean, I was on my A-licence in the summer there, and Stevie Caldwell was there. He was doing his assessment while I was doing my practical, and he still calls me, oh, there's a cheeky boy. It's one of the things, as I said, I loved it all. Better folks came in at a difficult time and had to build a team. And I'm grateful that he liked me and he saw enough in me, because, you know, I was young and I wasn't playing regular, as we said, and he stuck with me and kept me in the squads and kept playing me, and he saw something in me that I'm glad he did. And the cheeky boy thing obviously was lost in translation, but I think we all knew what he meant, and I took no offence to it at all.
It's funny, because managers, it just goes to show that different managers mean different things to different people, because I'm sure there is a perception out there that the Bertie Vokes era wasn't a particularly successful one, but you as an individual must look back to him as the guy that gave you your Scotland chance, stood by you, like you say, with the missed flight and so on. So you actually must hold him in pretty high esteem.
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, he gave Darren Fletcher a chance before he'd played any kind of football at Man United, because he knew that he was going to be a top player. And I think that's what he'd done. Bertie had the unenviable task of replacing a team like the one Craig Brown had, with a lot of experienced players that had played in tournaments, and they'd come at the end of their Scotland careers, so they had to rebuild. It was a tough job, and he'd done probably what no a lot of Scottish managers would have done, was he went and found out who was eligible, and he went and he watched them and played them. And at the time, everybody's saying, well, everybody's getting a cap and this and that, but we had to try and find players, you know, to fit into the team, and especially we had half decent young players coming through. We needed the experienced ones to help them through it.
I'm sure you remember all the Scotland goals, but go back to the first one because that naturally has its own significance. Aye. What do you take away from that? What are your memories of that one?
I remember obviously. Aye, came on at Hampden. Neil McCann was wide, and I just got in the box. Great ball in, and I thought, you know, if I was teaching anybody, I would say take it your good foot, and I had it with the side of my left just because I was comfortable. I've actually showed my wee boy the other day, and he says, "You'd have told me to hit that with my right foot, Dad." I says, "I would have," but it was
do
just
as
natural,
I say, not
so,
as I do. Yeah,
exactly. So I was delighted. Obviously, I'd played. I think it was my fifth game, and. Yeah, I was delighted off the mark, especially scoring at Hampden. I know it was against the Faroes, but you know, before I started playing football, I'd have took one appearance in the first team, one Mullow appearance. If you know, if the cap in the Far East was my last, I'd still have been delighted because you know that's what I set out to do. And to score my first goal at Hampden for Scotland was special.
Well, luckily there was a few more that followed. Took 15 goals in total, and I'm not sure many people realise this because I think we all know that we've not had too many great goal scorers certainly in recent years, but I was looking it up this morning, and only six players have scored more goals for Scotland than you have. That must be a really nice thing to hear. That must be a big achievement for a Scotsman.
Oh, it is. I mean, as I said, I've taken one cap, 1 minute, one game, you know, setting out. I was never... I just love playing football, and I just wanted to play it professionally. If I could play... I was asked when I was younger if I could play for Scotland, you know. I didn't know if I was going to be good enough to play for my country. It's the highest honour. Any football player, and to go there, and as you say, there's only six before me. I think, you know, obviously I've had my time with injuries, and I could look back and say it would have been higher. It would definitely have been higher, but I'll take everything I've got and take it with pride.
We kicked off talking about the France goal for obvious reasons, but the nice thing must be that it wasn't the only good one. You know, it's not as if the rest were all tap-ins. How special was the Holland goal? Listen, we know how it panned out in the end, but as a singular moment, as a rush of euphoria and what that meant at the time, that must have been right up there.
Absolutely. I think it was the same. Holland at the time were a massive, massive nation with huge stars playing for them. And we were, as I said, we're building a team. I think Betty had finally found a settled enough squad. And it was a great performance. We put on a great performance. And it was a massive, massive goal. I think the feeling after it's probably the best I've had scoring a goal. It was unbelievable, especially I was young and you're playing against guys that two or three years ago you'd watched on the telly in a tournament, and all of a sudden you're playing against them, and it was a special day. Obviously, it didn't work out in well in the second leg, but just for that moment, it was something special.
Because you talked about your own sense of belief and confidence, how you always backed yourself. Picking up the ball like that as a young guy in a Scotland jersey against these kind of world beaters, again, is that the same thought process? You know, why not? Why not take them on? Why not try
I've always believed that, you know, if I went in full time at Motherwell, there was so many as an under 18 squad, but the odd occasion would trade me the first team or the under 20, playing under 20s, and I always wanted to show that I was better than what was there, or show people I was good. But at the end of the day, you're all on the same pitch. Whether it's training or in games, you're in the same pitch. So, you know, you've got a right to be there. So go and show everybody why you're there. That was the same. I no long moved to Everton. And I was trying to establish myself there. And I think, you know, playing there with the players that we had at the time obviously helped me instantly. But to go and play against all these teams, it was always about playing against the best and doing what you're good at against the best. Do it this, you know, if you're playing against people that... you're not, say, playing at boys' club, you push on, you're on the same pitch as these guys, and you want to show everybody that you deserve to be there.
How do you look back in that time down south? Because, again, you talk about perception. My guess would be many people's perception of James McFadden's time in England is injury hit. But you look back at some of the highs, goals at Old Trafford, goals against Chelsea, a double against Arsenal, that goal against Charlton that everyone remembers. How do you look back on that period?
As I said, if I could sum up my career, I would say I don't have any regrets because everything I've had, I'm extremely grateful for, and I don't wish for more. In terms of, I'm happy with what I've done. I went to England. I had quite a lot of injuries, but I did have a lot of highs, as you say. All the goals that I scored, I never scored loads of goals, but again, similar to Scotland, some of them were pretty spectacular. Some of them were good goals, important goals. I always tended to do that throughout my career, score at important times. So I look back and say I played for close to 10 years in the Premier League. You know, it wasn't a flash in the pan. It wasn't I went down for a year or two and it didn't work out and I came back up the road. I was there for 10 years. So I was there for a reason. I enjoyed my time. I met some good people, played with some great players, played against the best. And I have nothing but fond memories looking back.
How much of a frustration is there at being on 48 caps? I mean, two short of the 50.
Not that long ago, you know, it was hard to take, but I mean, I've got 48 caps, you know, it's two caps obviously would make a difference.
48 caps more than most people.
Exactly, it's 48 more than I thought I was going to get. I've had great times, some bad times. I've had injuries. There's nothing I can do about it. And even with the two caps, I can't change that. So if I start saying, oh, I've only this and that, I'm going to become bitter and I'm not a bitter person. I'm very optimistic. I never ever look back and think, you know, that's rubbish. Although it contradicts what I was saying about the referees, if there's injustice, then I'll fight for it. But I can't change that. So I would rather be happy with what I've got than sitting here being a bitter player going, he should have done that and he should have done that. Nothing. I've done everything I've done and I'm happy with it.
I know we've been asking you to pick out highlights. The France goal speaks for itself. You spoke about the goal against Holland. Your Scotland career kind of spanned a transitional period. We saw a lot of players in a Scotland jersey. Can you pick out one that you thought was the best player you played with for Scotland?
I think I'd probably go for Barry Ferguson. Ferry could do everything. He could pass it, he could tackle, he could shoot, he could score goals. He was the anchor in midfield. I think Barry had a lot closely. I think Dan Fletcher's up there as well for the same reasons. Darren was, a lot was expected of Darren and still is when he plays for Scotland because of what he'd done at club level, but fantastic teammate, great guy off the park, and a great guy to have on it. I think Barry probably just shares it in terms of, you know, his vision, the way he played the game. I love playing with Barry and Darren for the guy he was. You wouldn't have known he was a superstar at Man United. He came up, he was one of the boys. And he knew what his job was for the team. Fantastic teammate.
We spent a lot of time taking a trip down memory lane, so let's look to the future. What does the future hold for James McFadden, starting in the kind of short term and then a bit further?
Short term, I'm trying to keep playing. I've had a couple of offers and, you know, one or two, they've been decent, but at the timing probably wasn't right. But I'm going to try and keep playing. I enjoyed the coaching side of it last year, but you know, I'm a player first and foremost, and I'll play for as long as nobody wants me.
But the coaching experience you had, did that whet the appetite? That's something that you did that confirm your belief that it's something you want to do the longer term?
It was an eye opener. There was, you know, I didn't think coaching was going to be easy by no stretch, but it was an eye opener to let you know exactly what went on. Also, it gave me the insight to say I want to keep playing for as long as I can. However long that is, I don't know, but I want to keep playing, and then it means I'm going to be better prepared for when the day comes that I'm going to either be a coach or a manager. And it was a great experience for me.
Well, thanks to James McFadden. That was our first in our series of podcasts with Scotland legends and cult heroes. James, I know I'm sure I speak on behalf of Scotland fans everywhere when I say you gave us all some fantastic memories. So thanks for that, and thanks for joining us.
Cooper comes up, hits it. Yeah!
Leach. There's the goal! Richie!